Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Game over!
Fueled by Temperance Spirits, Edmonton's leading non-alcoholic beverage provider. Order online for doorstep delivery.
The NHL season's heating up, and there's never been a better time to get in on the action. Whether you're looking to hammer home a Leon Draisaitl anytime goal or ride the puck line with the Edmonton Oilers, our partners at Sign Up Expert want to make sure you're...
Oilers fans, this holiday season, there is a lot to celebrate. And Temperance Spirits has you covered, curating the best non-alcoholic beverages to keep the party going into the new year. As a small Edmonton-based business, Temperance is rooted in community and bringing people together. Available online, enjoy fast local delivery to your doorstep in the greater Edmonton area.
Whether you're hosting this year's holiday party or looking for the perfect gift, Temperance Spirits is your go-to source for celebrating without the buzz. To make your holidays brighter, order your favorite non-elk drinks at www.temperance-spirits.com and score a festive 15% off with the discount code SDPN.
This season, let the Temperance Spirits online store be your secret to scoring a merry and festive celebration. You can stay connected with them at Temperance Spirits on Instagram and Facebook.
All right, welcome back to a special crossover edition of Game Over Edmonton. The Oilers win 3-1 over the Ottawa Senators to win their, I believe, 7th in a row, thanks to a hat trick from Zach Hyman. Maude, that was a pretty boring game for what, about 55 minutes or so. I know it's super late for you. Let's just jump into it. You know, what were your kind of overall thoughts on the game?
Yeah, a boring game is right. I'll put it this way. I have COVID, and watching this game was more painful than sitting around with COVID from the Senators' perspective. So, rough one here tonight. I am glad to be back on the show, though. Missed the last one because of sickness. So, even though it's a crappy one once again for the Sens, that's the trend lately, I'm glad to be back here to talk about it at least.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm glad you're feeling well enough to come on and talk to me about this game. I'm sorry, you guys. Oh, I'm not that sorry you didn't get the result that you wanted. I'm quite happy. The Oilers' record is now 20-15-1 after starting 2-9-1, you know, being literally dead last in the NHL at one point when they lost to the San Jose Sharks, to come storming all the way back. Now they finally, after all this, after firing their coach, a little bit before they should have. I'm sure you were kind of on the opposite end of that spectrum, and we can get into that. And I'm interested in a lot of Senators stuff because they're a team that, you know, they do interest me. Like, I don't understand how they're bad. Like, I truly don't. Obviously, I'm kind of lucky with the talent I get to watch every single night. Going into this game, obviously, Stuart Skinner gets a start for Edmonton. Anton Forsberg gets a start for Ottawa. Once an Oiler, always an Oiler. I thought they were going to get goalied by Anton Forsberg. That's at least what it looked like coming out of the first period, 0-0. Evan Bouchard, it kind of started off like the Oilers had some pressure. And then Evan Bouchard, an early giveaway to Tim Stützle, comes in kind of at a bad angle. And that was like, what, the Sens' best chance of the first period?
I can't even remember any good chances we had in the first period, which is rough because I felt like the first half of this game was better than the second half for the Sens, probably just because it was scoreless in the first half. But yeah, like, it's a struggle for me to even remember any scoring chances other than the goal. I feel like Parker Kelly, even before he scored, had our best chances tonight, like even before the goal. And that's not a good thing when he's the guy who is the most noticeable on offense. So, you mentioned the goaltending battle with Skinner and Forsberg. I feel like a pretty easy night for Skinner overall.
Yeah, totally. This is Stu was very solid tonight when he had me. He kind of sucks. Honestly, I was a little sad he didn't get the shutout. I've been really, really, really hard on Stuart Skinner this season. Obviously, the Oilers expected to be a championship-level team, and they were not getting championship-level goaltending. But I believe now this being his 15th start, or whether you want to look at his last 13 starts, he's above a 925 or something, and he's been playing really well. The Oilers had a 8-game win streak previously in the season, which Stuart Skinner was pretty average, actually. The Oilers were just playing really well defensively, and over that 8-game stretch, he only ended up finishing with, like, plus one goal saved above expected. But during this stretch, he's been much better. He's stopping everything that he should have, should be, and a little bit more. There was kind of a flurry in the second period where I felt like he made three kind of decent saves, but there were no, at least it didn't feel like to me there were any grade A opportunities. I know I kind of texted this to you and I put this in the group chat, but like after the first period, the Senators were like point, according to Money Puck, were 0.38 expected goals generated to the Oilers, like 2.5 in that period, right? Like Forsberg was standing on his head. That was the only reason the Senators were in that game. Besides Parker Kelly and Forsberg, is there anyone else that stood out to you?
Really, no. Like I feel like Giroux had a decent motor tonight and he was trying to make things happen, but it's a struggle when your line mates aren't able to do that either. Like Brady Tkachuk had the decent setup on the goal, which I was surprised that was initially waved off.
Yeah,
that was really weird. So unfortunately Skinner not getting the shutout on that one. I'll be honest, like I have Skinner on one of my fantasy teams and I was actually kind of mad that we scored on him, because at this point with how bad the season is for the Sens, I was just hoping for the fantasy stats instead, just to get that shutout. So it's depressing. I feel like in terms of offense, this is my issue with this team, is that I feel like even if this team is going to be bad, they should at least be scoring a bunch of goals.
Yeah,
should be a high-flying offensive team, but there was just absolutely none of that tonight.
Well, if
we've had some other games recently where we have been scoring and then, you know, blowing the lead, but we have too many games like this where we just don't generate anything.
Well, it felt like to me, it felt like Stützle was generating, but there's just no one around him to finish. Like, you see, like, the Oilers had a problem earlier on in the season, and I know we're not talking about the game specifically, but, like, finding line mates for Leon Draisaitl, whether it was Evander Kane on his line or Sam Gagner, whoever, he wasn't able to have a player to play off. And as you can tell by looking at the top 10 point scorers in the NHL, like, Leon's not on that list right now because he'd never had those players to play off of, and his shooting percentage isn't as high this year as it has been the previous, like, 5 years or whatever. So, but now with Warren Fogle and Ryan McLeod, and in this game specifically, again, they're so, so, so noticeable, and they're not the biggest names or whatever, but they allow Leon to play off of him, and they allow him to set up in the offensive zone, and McLeod and Fogle are both capable of hanging onto the puck while Leon works himself to another open area to get open, to take a shot, to create a better chance, rather than all the offense being 100% reliant upon Leon Draisaitl specifically. And it kind of feels to me that the Sens don't have that with Tim Stützle, because he was creating. He got some shots. The Sens kind of missed the net in some key areas. They definitely could have created. There were a few posts. Chychrun hit a post earlier. McEwen hit a post kind of later on in the game. But it just feels weird. Like, to me, when I hear the names Giroux, Tarasenko, like, to me as an outsider who doesn't really, like, I watch the Sens twice a year when they play the Oilers. Like, that is it. And when, like, Vladimir Tarasenko, to me, like, felt like he was kind of noticeable, I want to say. There was that play, earlier on where Matthias Ekholm kind of crushed him from behind, and I thought it was going to be a penalty, but it obviously wasn't, which ended up working. Obviously, it honestly wouldn't have even mattered because in that first period right after there, and here comes my next question, Evander Kane, kind of careless, is kind of the theme with Evander Kane. You take the good and the bad, the streaky with that guy. He spins around, hits Claude Giroux in the face. Giroux goes down. The Sens get a double minor, and they get nothing on that power play. It was a huge momentum killer. What happened there?
When I said earlier that this was a painful game to watch, it was literally right from the beginning of the game, specifically because of that 4-minute power play. I don't know what it is this year, because last year the Sens spent a good chunk of the season ranked in the top 5 for power play, and I think they finished 8th. And this season it's just totally cratered. Like, it is absolutely in the toilet. And especially the first power play unit just feels so stagnant, just kind of trying to do the same plays over and over again. If they don't set up Josh Norris for that perfect one-timer on the right wing, they basically have no other, like, plays at all. Like, especially Tim Stützle this season. You're right that he was creating some stuff and he did have some shots today, but I feel like his shot is not threatening at all this season. And I've really been wondering if he's struggling with an injury, like a wrist or arm or something like that, like shoulder maybe. It just feels like his shot doesn't feel threatening. It feels like he's passing off options to shoot too. So when you only have Norris as that shooting option on the power play, it's pretty rough. And there was a couple of opportunities on that 4-minute power play where they sent it to Norris and the pass was off, or he just kind of whiffed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, like, it's frustrating too, because you also have Brady Tkachuk on that power play unit. You should be getting a lot of shots on net for him to get deflections or rebounds. And I kind of feel like maybe they should go for a little bit more of a volume approach and just try to utilize Tkachuk. But it feels like a lot of the time we just don't even get the puck on net if it's not from the Norris one-timer. So then Tkachuk is useless on the power play too at that point. It's really weird with the coaching change. And apparently Daniel Alfredsson is the power play coach now, but I haven't really noticed much of a difference. I kind of feel like they're kind of trying to stick to similar strategies that they've been using so far. And I feel like they really need to change it up.
Yeah, totally. It's funny just to contrast what you were saying there about how the Sens kind of were going for the same look over and over and over. And that's kind of, and obviously the Oilers have a deadly power play, but for a long stretch, and even the last like 15 games, despite the winning, the power play really hasn't been there. It's been mostly 5-on-5 production. And it's funny because early on in the game, the Oilers power play got nothing. Like, the Sens PK was set up really well. They established their box down low, and the Oilers could not get anything going, because the same, very similar to the Sens, you know exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to get Connor to circle around, give it to Bouchard, maybe back to Nugent Hopkins, back to Bouchard, gets it to Connor. Connor skates around looking for Leon. He's waiting for the seam to open, and because the Sens were so well positioned and so they were just in the right spots with their sticks, they weren't able to get the pass. Every time they made the pass, it was broken up, sent back down the ice. They couldn't create anything. Later on, the shift comes when the Oilers finally score their 1-0 goal later on in the second period, right? They finally, someone told them, like, just get a point shot, get a point shot, get a point shot. And Evan Bouchard is one of the best defensemen in the NHL, generating those chances, creating from the blue line. And what does he do? Gets it in, goes off Zach Hyman. I don't know. It was a very, very, very soft tip, but beats Anton Forsberg finally.
Yeah, I didn't
finally
see that tip in real time. I was surprised when they said it was changed.
It's funny. On my notes, I wrote might have been tipped by Hyman, and then they kind of went with Bouchard. Usually you can hear the in-house announcer kind of change the goal, and I never heard that, but like, it wasn't a very obvious deflection. I'm honestly, like, it was 50-50. If they left it as Bouchard, I'm sure like nothing ever would have come from it, but they gave it to Hyman, and obviously Zach Hyman got his 23rd, 24th, and 25th goals of the year, so he's halfway to 50 now. $5.5 million. Some people said it was the worst free agent signing of all time. It's very funny to see. But yeah, no, the Oilers, obviously, this from my perspective, at least watching, like, I know you were complaining about how the Sens, what I sense you're getting at is sloppy, whatever, a bunch of different things. But that's kind of how I felt the Oilers played. Like, this was not a good game from the Oilers by many.
It really wasn't.
No. Like, you could tell when they have their legs, and the Oilers are a team that they're, I don't know, that, again, I only watch the Oilers, so it's really tough to say, but like, they're a team that feels like if they score in the first 5 minutes of the game, then all of a sudden the ball's rolling and the confidence it's going. If they don't, they get really stagnant and they let the other team back into the game. Like, the Oilers are a team that will dominate you for 15-minute stretches. And then all of a sudden for the next 10 minutes, you're like, where'd that go? How is, you know, Parker Kelly and Zach MacEwen getting all these chances on Stuart Skinner? But it was a really sloppy game. But the thing is, again, this is the type of game where the Oilers have the talent to kind of sit back and let themselves kind of play into the game, even though that's not really how they're built, not how you want to win long term, obviously. But yeah, it was a really odd game for the Oilers, and I wasn't really happy on a number of fronts. I felt like they weren't necessarily giving up the defensive opportunities that they were against even Anaheim in the last couple games, but I felt it felt odd. It almost felt like they would have let Ottawa into this game if Ottawa was willing to take it, but Ottawa wasn't.
Like it, yeah.
And like, guys like that, I hear of when I watch highlights or whatever, you know, you see goals from Drake Batherson, Brady Tkachuk, and you brought up Tkachuk earlier, and obviously Tkachuk created that goal late in the period that ended up counting when the Sens challenged it. It's just really odd to see, because they're not noticeable like you would expect from an outsider perspective. Like, Brady Tkachuk does not impact the game the way, and obviously I have a lot more experience watching Matthew Tkachuk, obviously. He doesn't impact the game in the way that I expected him to impact the game. What's up with that? Is he injured as well, or is this just Brady Tkachuk?
It's possible that he could also be dealing with a lingering injury, but I feel like it's more of a mental thing for him this year. I think it was either after the last game or after the Vancouver game 2 games ago, he was quoted as saying, like, this is the worst he's ever felt in his life with how the team is doing. So I feel like he's getting in his own head about it even more with how the season is spiraling with just loss after loss. Because you compare him to his brother. Like, I think last year, Brady did have that effect on games. He could totally, rally the troops and put up the shots, hits, and goals, and even assists on the scoreboard. But this year, he's outside of, like, a decent goal total. He's really not impacting the game as much. Like you said, you don't really notice him until he makes that one play where he drives the net. It's tough. I feel like the line combinations have been juggling a lot for the Sens, and they haven't been able to find one that works, which is really weird because last year they played Tkachuk, Stützle, Giroux for like the whole year as the first line, and they absolutely carried us. We were a complete one-line team, and now those guys are getting switched around a bunch, not really finding chemistry with the other players too, and it's just really weird. I feel like it's all mental with Brady, and it's tough to see from our captain too. You expect him to be the guy who can really lead, and it feels like he might need a little bit of help in terms of leading.
Yeah, totally. And one of those guys that was playing almost more like Brady Tkachuk, and in my eyes, more noticeable than Brady Tkachuk tonight, was like Ridly Gregg. Like, you at least saw Ridly Gregg try to get in the face of some Oilers. He hammered Derek Ryan in the second period, right? Like, he got in there. I thought Evander Kane was going to go after him that shift, because obviously Evander Kane is down on the Oilers' third line right now. But just like outside of Ridly Gregg, outside of Parker Kelly, outside of some of like the Sens like supporting cast, it didn't feel like it was there for them, and it didn't feel like they wanted it. They feel like checked out to me, if that makes sense. Like, there's just no, like, you're down 2-1. You just score a goal. What the hell is Artem Zub doing with that stupid penalty on Warren Fogel? Like, I just can't explain it. Like, maybe, okay, your first penalty wasn't, like, debatable, whatever. I can't even remember exactly what it, was it the holding on McDavid? Was that a Zub? Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's Connor McDavid. He draws a million calls. He's going to draw a million calls. I would honestly prefer. Connor McDavid doesn't get the benefit of the doubt enough. So when that does happen, I'm a very happy camper. But yeah, like what we're, I'm kind of jumping all around. I'm not really going in chronological order, but I mean, this is such a boring game. Like, we can talk about Nurse and Warren Fogel running into each other in the neutral zone, giving, I think it was Parker Kelly, a partial breakaway who, and I think he missed the net or whatever. But like outside of that, it was pretty laid back, lackadaisical game. Like, I mean, if you even look at the shots, like the first period, they were 15-9 for Edmonton. Did not feel like, it felt like it were 15-2. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it did not feel. Yeah. And then I think 33-19 after the third, and then the Sens kind of got a few more shots in the third, but they were kind of a lot from the outside. They were trying to create a little bit, but once Zub took that penalty, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about that. What are our thoughts on Artem Zub? What's our thoughts on that whole situation there with Warren Fogel? How frustrating was that for you to watch?
It's a tough one because it's definitely a penalty, but I feel like it's the type of thing that gets let go by the refs a lot. So I feel like it was just kind of unlucky that they actually decided to call it on Zub. I can't really get too mad at him for it, especially because a lot of the time on dump-in plays, you're able to just completely rub the guy off against the boards. And I guess this was more towards the middle of the ice, which is why they called it. And I don't remember. Did the Oilers player, did Fogel have the puck and then chip it in, or was he chasing it?
I want to say he had possession. He chipped it in, and then he was trying to get around Zub, and Zub kind of interfered with him. You did see, though, earlier in the game, like, Evan Bouchard kind of get in the way of, I can't remember who on the Sens, kind of go for the dump in, and Bouchard kind of goes for the late pick interference play, which is, again, a borderline play with a player like Connor McDavid. It's like, it happens 12 times a game. People interfere with him all the time to get away with it. So when I saw Bouchard get called for that, I was pretty frustrated. I can't lie, even though it by the book, it is a penalty. So that's kind of where I thought they were going with that Fogle one. Another thing that did happen, though, that this makes me think of is if you think kind of a little bit before this, in the third period, Claude Giroux was going into the Oilers zone. He was creating, and the Oilers' third pair was on the ice, was Desharnais and Kulak. And Giroux tries to make a move around Kulak, and it looks like he has Kulak beat. And Kulak, on the broadcast, they kind of said, oh, wow, what a amazing defensive play by Brett Kulak. But I feel like if Claude Giroux were to have fallen, because it looked like he did lose his balance, but he regained it and he fought hard, he would have drawn a penalty there. But he didn't fall. So, I don't know. It was really weird. Officiated game, I thought. I mean, there wasn't anything egregious, obviously. It was pretty lackadaisical effort from all parties involved. From an outsider perspective, one thing I kind of want to ask, just because I like to get people's thoughts on it who don't usually watch the Oilers. Obviously, you know McDavid, Drysdale, Nugent-Hopkins, Hyman, whatever. Evan Bouchard, is he better than you thought? Is he exactly what you thought? What are your thoughts on Evan Bouchard? Did he stand out to you tonight? Three assists?
Yeah, the three assists. It's like, especially the shooting threat on the power play, I think is what I love to see. Because as I was saying with the Sens power play earlier, you just have that play to Norris and then they don't do anything else. Like, Shabbat isn't much of a shooting threat. Neither is Sanderson or Chychrun at the point. So having the defenseman who can fire the puck like that is awesome. Obviously, it didn't end up being his goal. Hyman kind of stole it. But I love that element of his game, just to have that absolute bomb of a shot. And yeah, like, I feel like he is one of the better offensive defensemen in the NHL. I don't think I watched the Oilers closely enough to know, like, if his defensive game really holds up, because that's the question with him, right? But whenever I see him in highlights and stuff, I'm just constantly impressed.
Oh, it's funny because, like, early on in the game, right, that first play where Stützle kind of, he tries to make a move in the neutral zone on Stützle. Stützle poke checks it and creates a pretty decent opportunity, even though he wasn't really able to create much from it. That's, like, Evan Bouchard's game in a nutshell. For a long period of time, he just wasn't getting the saves, like one of the worst on-ice save percentages in the NHL relative to, like, everyone else. But then when he started getting the saves, all of a sudden, like, to me, he is the Oilers' best defenseman, not even close. Mm-hmm. Like, I give him, I honest to God believe he deserves Norris votes this year. He's excellent on both ends of the ice. Him and Matthias Ekholm are the best pair in the NHL. When those two are on the ice, it is always in the offensive zone. It doesn't matter if they're playing the Sens, the Blue Jackets, or the team that has the second best expected goals for in the LA Kings. Like, they always have the puck in the offensive zone. And you combine that with the Oilers' first line of Hyman, McDavid, and Nugent Hopkins, who's in terms of, like, expected goals, I think they're still, according to Money Puck Riding, like, control like 75% of the expected goals, and that line is on the ice after, like, now playing together for, like, what, 200 minutes, something like that. Like, that is just such a dominant combination of five. It's really, really fantastic to see. And the biggest thing for us, at least as, like, Oilers fans, is watching him make moves to the blue line. Like, you saw the way he can keep the puck in on the power play is such a game changer. And the way he can create on the power play and get it to Ekholm and keep plays alive, where we're so used to for so long. Even Tyson Barry wasn't nowhere near as good as Evan Bouchard. Cody Ceci, we still struggle watching him make plays, trying to hold the zone. Like, you saw, obviously, the most noticeable thing from Cody Ceci tonight was getting hit in the face with a puck, which is kind of just a puck. And I'm shocked the concussion spotter didn't pull her from the game, to be honest with you. It was kind of odd when you lay on the ice like that, like, not to come out of the game, but whatever. Even Giroux, when he got hit in the face, he was right back out on that 4-minute power play. So that was a little odd to see. But yeah, you know, Cody Ceci, the Oilers kind of need an upgrade there. That's the one thing.
I wanted to ask you about CC's season, because he is always relevant in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. He is just part of the Senators' lore at this point. So, like, you say they need an upgrade on him. I felt like he was fine tonight, but he's also the type of defenseman that he's never going to be better than fine, right?
Yeah, I mean, if he was the Oilers' third pair right shot defenseman, I would have absolutely zero complaints from him. The problem with Cody Ceci is he's stapled to Darnell Nurse, and when he's stapled to Darnell Nurse, he's playing, you know, he played almost 21 minutes tonight. He's put on the, and again, if in defensive zone situations, on the penalty kill, absolutely by all means, sure, whatever. But the problem is, when you're on the ice with Drysdale and McDavid specifically, if you cannot break out the puck, if you cannot keep the play alive in the offensive zone, you absolutely kill this team. And Darnell Nurse needs a partner that is built for him. You need someone who's really good at puck retrievals. You need someone who can make a breakout pass. And you need someone who is probably a little bit better offensively than CeCe. Because the amount of opportunities, even over the last 10 games that Cody Ceci has had in the slot alone. Like, I can't remember what game it was, but Cody Ceci had a breakaway not too long ago. And
what the hell?
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Oilers put their defenseman, and I know they talked about this on the broadcast, but the way Paul Coffey has kind of changed the Oilers' defense is the activation, and the Oilers are, like, their defense are much more active. It's a four-man attack a lot of times. Like, there's always a defenseman jumping in on the rush. The problem is, when it's Cody Ceci, you can just expect that it is not going to go in the net, which is kind of a huge killer, because they create so much for him. I believe he is the current skater who with the active longest goal drought in the NHL. It's, I want to say it's like 130-something games. He hasn't scored since game one of last season.
What? Yeah, last year.
Probably. Yeah, exactly. I saw another podcast. They did the math. Essentially, with the amount Cody Ceci has skated, thanks to NHL Edge, he could have skated all the way to Winnipeg and back to Edmonton in the time that he's hasn't scored a goal.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me too much, because one of the moments that just sticks out in my brain with Cody Ceci is actually when he was on the Leafs in the bubble, and they had, like, it was against the Blue Jackets in the play-in series. They had, like, an awesome shift in the offensive zone, and they unfortunately send it to Cody Ceci for a shot, and it goes, like, 6 feet wide of the entire net. So I'm not surprised at all by that. And the other Cody Ceci moment that I have to bring up, too, that's burned into my memory from his time in Ottawa, was there was once, and someone posted the GIF of this the other day, so I'm not making this up. There was once a time where he lost the puck. He turned over the puck to a player without a stick in the neutral zone. And that is just like Cody Ceci personified in my mind. Does he still have moments like that?
Oh, all the time. There's always moments. I mean, the thing is, Darnell Nurse gets a lot of flack, but he is stapled to a guy where Darnell needs to be the number one. He's paid to be the Oilers' number one defenseman. He needs to be the Oilers' number one defenseman. He tries to do almost too much sometimes, and I think he kind of drags Cody Ceci into that with him sometimes, just to be just by how much they're on the ice together. And there are so many times you're like, oh, the break. Oh, it's Cody Ceci. What the hell? Oh, Cody Ceci. What? Just shoots it 10 feet wide into the boards, off the net. Oftentimes he's hitting Derek Ryan in the shin pad somehow with the puck 4 feet wide of the net. But again, he's solid in the right situations. But again, in this top pair, and I see people in the chat are kind of, yo, I have no issue with CC. I get that. He's fine. But again, when you're a Stanley Cup contender, you want someone who's able to move the puck, and just, you want the optimal partner for Nurse, and he is not the optimal partner for Nurse. The optimal partner for Nurse, honestly, is probably Evan Bouchard, but him and Ekholm just work so well together that you don't want to do it. Before we're kind of cruising along real quick here, I mean, there was nothing to talk about for so long in this game. Yeah. I just want to say what's up to everyone in the chat. It's super late, so thank you for sticking around and joining us late at night here. MGD, McNader, Travis, all the regulars, Drew, I'm not sure if he's a Game Over Ottawa regular or not, I don't, Luke, everyone joining us, Minister, there's 35 people watching right now, so if you want to go ahead, hit like, we really appreciate it, it helps us out a lot, hit subscribe, we're closing in on 100,000 subscribers, so it really, really would help us a lot. Other than that, if anyone's got any press conference questions, I don't know if you do, but the Oilers, the Senators, anything kind of going on this season with either team, throw them in the chat, we'll try and get to them pretty quick here. Just other than that, Maud, is there anything else tonight? Like, or here, you know what I actually want to ask you about? Here is the last thing while we wait for press conference questions. Last year, I wanted Jacob Chychrun so bad. The Oilers ended up getting Matthias Ekholm, right? How has Jacob Chychrun's fit been in Ottawa? Because Ekholm has been fantastic. And
So this is a funny question, specifically because of the Oilers being roped into it, is because I really like Jacob Chychrun, and I'm probably one of the most happy with him in the Sens fan base from what I've seen on Twitter. But you should be glad that you got Matthias Ekholm instead, because in terms of his defensive play, it would not be what the Oilers needed. Like, the physicality and the defensive acumen that Ekholm has is exactly what the Oilers needed. Mm-hmm. And really, it's what the Sens need too.
Yeah.
Even though Chychrun is an awesome offensive D, it's like, that's purely what he is at this point. He has a lot of moments defensively, just lapses in judgment and stuff like that, and some turnovers. He's kind of the play style where he's going to turn the puck over a lot because he always has the puck on his stick. So sometimes you can give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt for that. Personally, I'm really impressed with his offensive game, and I feel like his defensive deficiencies, like, we can get away with them. It's just like the rest of the decor that's really doesn't pick up the slack is the problem. So if we had some better defensive D, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. Personally, I would have liked to see him as the Sens all-star choice instead of Brady Tkachuk, just because of how this season has gone. But that might be a little bit of a hot take among the Sens fan base. So, like, for what our team is, I feel like he brings very good elements. A couple of weeks ago, I went through all the money puck stats of the Sens defense, and Chychrun was pretty much ranked first on the Sens in, like, all the important metrics, like all the expected metrics and the real metrics as well for the actual results on the ice. So even though he does have his issues, he has been the Sens' best D, in my opinion, and I'm glad that we got him. But in terms of the Oilers, I don't think he would have been the guy. It's probably good that you got Ekholm instead.
I remember hearing last year, or just kind of on Twitter and everywhere else, that the Oilers had a pat, like, they were going to trade for Jacob Chychrun, and I don't know if what happened exactly with Dorion, but Ekholm fell in their lap, and they obviously, Holland, you know, leans to the veteran, and there were questions about Chychrun's defensive game. I had it convinced in my head that it was Arizona, and he was being dragged down by that team, but relative to everyone else, he was going to come in here, pair with Evan Bouchard, and be an all-star defenseman. So it's really funny to see, because Ekholm had me worried. Like, Ekholm's 33, he makes over 6 mil, like, more, well, considerably more than Jacob Chychrun, but he has been just so, so, so good. Outside of a 7-game stretch at the beginning of this season where he was had a hip injury, he was clearly injured, just absolutely excellent. He looks like the Matthias Ekholm that went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the Nashville Predators. So it's really funny to hear. I didn't expect you to say that he would be your all-star choice. That's really unexpected, I guess. Or do you just have you're not happy with Brady Tkachuk right now, as I take it?
I think mostly just because our forwards have been underwhelming overall. Like, Drake Batherson had a hot streak over the last couple of weeks, but he had a rough start to the year. Stützle has a lot of assists, but he just decided to stop scoring goals this season, hopefully because of, like, an injury or something. Don't know. Otherwise, if he doesn't have an injury, that's really worrying. Tkachuk has the goal total to be worthy of an all-star selection, but, like, he's always our all-star selection for the last, like, 4 years now. He's just, like, the obvious choice, so I would have liked to see someone different get it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, honestly, if the Oilers' all-star selection was Zach Hyman, I think every Oilers fan would be happy. I'm honestly, this might be a hot take, and there's, like, one question kind of we can get into after this, but I'm of the mind where, like, the Oilers right now only have Connor McDavid going to the All-Star game. I'd be happy if no other Oiler went to the All-Star. I'd much rather them have the rest at this point. Do not care if Leon Draisaitl goes to the All-Star game. I'd be happy if Connor McDavid, honestly, let him miss a game before the All-Star break. Say you're injured, miss the All-Star break, go rest, go relax. Like, Connor McDavid's been to more All-Star games than Sidney Crosby has at this point already, right? So
that's crazy. Oh my god.
Yeah, I think this is Crosby's 6th and McDavid's 7th. So everyone vote McDavid, vote Hyman, vote Draisaitl, vote Nugent-Hopkins, vote Bouchard. No, let them get the rest. Let them go to Cabo for 4 days. The Oilers need it. They've been playing insane. I believe they have the best record in the NHL since, I want to say, the beginning of November. They're cruising at like an 850 point percentage right now. And again, 2-9-1. I thought the McDavid era was over. Our Sharks broadcast went crazy. And all of a sudden, they're the best team in the NHL, and they are exactly what they thought they were. McNader in the chat says, are the Oilers fooling themselves into being a cup contender? Are we going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline? Not fooling yourselves at all. I think, obviously, I still would like a goalie. I don't care how well Stuart Skinner plays. I want someone I trust a bit more. I know it's tough to do. There's not many goalies out there. You know, Nashville said, no, I'm not trading Ekholm. I just signed Ekholm to an extension in the summer. We're not trading him. All of a sudden, they traded him. And obviously, that was David Poile, not Barry Trotz. But you know what? That's the one guy I'll hold out hope for is UC Saros. I'd trade 10 first-round picks for him. If he was on the Edmonton Oilers, they probably have a 27% chance of winning the Stanley Cup, according to everyone's models out there. But other than that, there's not too much going on. Is there any final thoughts? This was a super fun show, super quick, super late, but any final thoughts to you going into about the game? About the Sens?
I have a little bit of a hot take that I've been thinking about, is that maybe this is going to be too harsh of a comparison, but I feel like the Sens rebuild up to this point, we're getting a little farther away from it now, but I feel like the Sens rebuild is too close to the Taylor Hall era Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
In terms of it, but except without the first overall picks, which is the key point, is that we don't have a McDavid coming to save us, is that you had these young forwards that you just played on the first line immediately in their rookie seasons and having absolutely no veteran support or anything. And they were able to develop into pretty good point producers, but the all-around game is not there. And just the complete lack of actual veteran support for them throughout the rebuild. Here's the thing that I was thinking about is I think the best veteran player that this core was surrounded with during this rebuild was Connor Brown.
Oof.
And then you have Connor Brown in the Oilers now.
No, so, I've taken him back.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously he was much better in Ottawa than he has been for Edmonton. But it's like we're at this point where, sure, we're bringing in some more veterans now, like Giroux, Tarasenko, Chychrun, all good additions. But it feels like the team was just a bunch of young guys running around with no consequences for so long. And it really is giving me flashbacks of the Hall era Edmonton Oilers. Does that feel too harsh to you? Like, was it much worse or
no?
Do you think it makes sense?
Because I remember every year in the offseason, this is the year we're taking a step. Hall, Everly, Yakupov, Nugent Hopkins go up and down the list. And the guys that they would sign weren't, they wouldn't make trades. Like, it feels like the Sens made trades and brought people in when it was too late, when the thing was too far gone. Like, whether it's DeBrincat, and that obviously didn't work out. And then you have Giroux that you brought in to try and do it, but I don't really know. Like, obviously he's fit well, but I remember last season, he seemed a lot better, obviously, than he has been this year. Tarasenko, kind of at this point in his career, is kind of just a plug and play guy. And it reminds me, they always brought in Benoit Pouliot, you know, insert veteran here a little bit after, kind of overpaid to bring in the guy. Never really worked out. Always ended up in a buyout. One of the few guys who did work out was Andre Sekera. But those go back and look at the 13-14 Edmonton Oilers. There are some stars on that team, guys who have now been around the league quite a bit, you know, Everly and Hall specifically. But there was obviously the only guy that's been a constant was Ryan Nugent Hopkins throughout that. And maybe that's your Tim Stutz. Maybe your Tim Stutz is Leon Draisaitl, because that was drafted before Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl is a great player, in spite of the Edmonton Oilers, not because of the Edmonton Oilers. They did everything they could to fuck up his development. They brought him up as an 18-year-old. They made him the second line center. He had one goal in 33 games, I want to say. He looked completely lost. They burnt the year on his entry level contract. They sent him down to Prince Albert. He was traded to Kelowna, went on to win the Memorial Cup. Then the next year they get McDavid. And they finally send down Leon to the AHL. I can't remember if it was Leon or someone else, but he's in the AHL for like 4 games. And then they call him up and they put him in there, like, go. And he ended up having pretty decent chemistry with Taylor Hall. But again, they did everything they could to fuck up the development of Leon Draisaitl. And he has far and away exceeded even the highest expectations for his career. But yeah, no, I see that. With Tkachuk, Batherson, I mean, Stutzla's kind of the outlier, because to me he feels like a good player. Like, he feels like someone you can have as your first line center. But obviously you look around, even the Sens division, the guys, like, I know Tampa kind of stinks this year and Boston lost their centers, but for the last number of years, like, Auston Matthews, Patrice Bergeron, Steven Stamkos, Braden Point, like, there's Stutzla hasn't been on their level despite, you know, being a decent points producer. So I really do think that that does hit pretty close to home for me, and that makes me feel a lot worse for you. You buy into the hype every year, you think it's going to be good, and then they're, you know, 5-5 through 10, whatever the Sens were, and you're just like, oh, fuck, here we go again, and it's the same old, can we claw it out? You win a couple, you feel good, and then it's just another long losing streak. So I know exactly how your pain is. The one unfortunate thing is there is no Connor McDavid coming to you guys. That's got it. That's tough. But other than that, Maude, it's been fun. I really appreciate you hopping on with me tonight. It's super late, so I'm going to wrap it up here. Again, the Oilers win 3-1 over the Ottawa Senators. Maude, I'm not sure you want to let anyone know when your next game is or where they can find you on Twitter or anything.
Yeah, when is my next game?
Mm-hmm.
I I think the Sens, I don't even, you know what?
I don't even know
when the Sens play again, because I'm getting so checked out at this point that it's like, before, when I care, it's like, oh, I have the schedule memorized for the next couple of weeks. Now we're just at the point where it's like, oh, I don't even remember. But I think the next game that I'm hosting is like a week from now. So if anyone wants to come hang out for that one, there will be plenty more Game Over Ottawa where we will be continuing to suffer for sure. And on Twitter, you can find me at Mod Show. That's MaudeSCHO.
Oh, I kind of did you a little dirty there. And while you were saying you don't know where when the Sens next game is, I didn't know when the Oilers next game was. And I pulled up the schedule real quick. The Oilers next game will be against the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. They're going on a 3-game road trip. Avery will have all 3 games. Dennis and I will be back after that when the Oilers are back at home. But yeah, so the Oilers next game against Blackhawks, no Connor Bedard, which kind of sucks. Other than that, you can find me at ZWheel97 on Twitter. Thank you guys all for joining us tonight. It was a blast. I can't wait till do another one of these crossover shows.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Have a good night, everyone.
Yep. Take care.